Good evening, everyone. Let's see, Len.
Did I catch you at the last one on the pledge? Okay. Then it's about time for Dennis, would you lead us in the pledge, please?
Would you please follow me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Dennis. Okay. Suzanne, could we have a roll call, please?
Chairperson Jack?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Moreno?
Here.
Commissioner Bentz?
Present.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Present.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Here.
Commissioner Sturtevant?
Here.
Commissioner Ward?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Could I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Suzanne?
Was the second by?
Yes, this Commissioner Bentz.
Okay.
And the first was?
Vice Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Chairperson Bentz? Commissioner Bentz?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturtevant?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to open it up to public comment. This portion of the meeting is reserved for persons wishing to address the commission on any matter not on this agenda and over which the commission has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes. Please state your name and address for the record before making your presentation. Is there anyone that wishes to speak on something other than what's on the agenda tonight? Seeing none, I'll close the public comment, bring it back to the commission. And is there any commissioner having planning commission business that they wish to discuss at this time? Okay. Next item would be the consent calendar, the only item that we've got on it. Two items. Approval of the minutes. And staff report. Does anyone wish to pull anything from the consent calendar? Anyone from the public wish to pull? Yes.
So is number two on the consent calendar, or is that a separate, that's part of the consent calendar?
No. There's only one item on it, just the approval of the minutes on the consent calendar. The other is under community development staff report.
That's what I thought.
Right. So if no one wishes to pull it, could I have a motion?
Yes. A motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
Suzanne?
Second.
Commissioner Sturtevant?
Good evening, commissioners. Our first item tonight is going to be a tree removal permit at the Lakes Open Space. This is a request to remove one valley oak totaling 52 inches, and it's located on the open space lot at the lakes. The tree is a dead tree, and we have that certified by the project arborist. The project is located in the open space zone, and here you can see it's a 32-acre parcel in the center of the lakes development, and there's a large cluster of trees towards the center of the site, and that's where the dead tree is located. This is a photo of the tree. It has been certified that it's a dead tree, but it's not hazardous, which means that there aren't any trails or structures located underneath it. The tree removal, the tree ordinance requires that tree removals be mitigated. And that can either be through fees or from through replanting, or also a tree preservation easement can be done. In this case, the applicant has requested that it be done either through fees or replanting, and that will be either 17 native trees, and those are 5-gallon trees to be replanted, or $866.67, and that's a payment into the tree fund. The Planning Commission must make one of the findings from the tree ordinance to approve a tree removal, and in this case, this is the finding that staff has identified. And tonight, staff is recommending that the Planning Commission approve the tree removal as conditioned. And that concludes staff's presentation.
Are there any questions of staff?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
As far as the location of the replacement trees, can they be located anywhere within the project? Excuse me.
What the ordinance says is anywhere on site, so anywhere within that 32-acre open space site.
The reason why I mentioned that is last week or the week before, I had talked about some trees along Traffic Way that were dying out along the right-of-way there, and wondering if some of these trees could be put there versus within that 32-acre area.
Yeah, for the applicant to do the replanting, that would need to be on site. If they paid into the tree fund, then it could be a city project where we went out and planted those trees and maintained them.
Okay, thank you.
Before we go any further, I'd like to have any expertise disclosure for this.
None, please.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
None.
Commissioner Moreno?
No expertise.
Commissioner
none.
Benz?
None.
Commissioner Ward?
None. The only comment is I think this is an absolute overkill. Cutting down a dead tree, but this is not the time and the place
to discuss right
that.
Now.
So
thank you.
I have none.
Thank you. And I have none. My mistake. I was out there. I talked to one of the homeowners. I did not get a name, and a name was not volunteered. So with that, continue on with any questions that any commissioners have. Commissioner Moreno?
To promote regeneration of the trees. So when an older tree dies, that way we get more smaller trees replanted on site in the future. When all the older trees have died off, we still have that regeneration happening. So that's the purpose of the mitigation in the tree ordinance. We do waive the permit fees, so they don't have to pay that in this case. But on an open space parcel, because of the zoning on this area, they do require a permit, and they do have to pay the mitigation.
Okay. Thank you, Kelly.
Commissioner Benz?
Question for staff. If the applicant, as I understand the report, they just want to remove the dead tree, but if they leave it there, they don't have to do anything, right?
That is correct. They're allowed to go ahead and just leave it there. Mm-hmm. So they've gone ahead and brought the tree removal permit in.
But the waiver of fees that's in the ordinance is just for the fee for bringing it before the Planning Commission, right?
That's correct.
And not the waiver of the fees for the new planting.
Yes, that's correct.
Unless it meets one of the four criteria for exemption.
The mitigation is always part of the tree removal permit. So the which exemptions were you talking about?
Let me read to you the exemptions. Emergency situations which cause hazardous or dangerous conditions that have serious potential to cause immediate damage to persons or improvement on real property. Such situations must be reported to the city within 48 hours. Trees planted, grown, and maintained as part of a licensed nursery or tree farm business. Tree pruning that affects less than 25% of a tree's live canopy within 1 year's time. The pruning shall be done according to current tree pruning standards as adopted by the International Society of Arboriculture. Trees removed as part of an approved tree management plan, and single-family residences in single-family zoning districts where a permanent dwelling exists and building or grading permits are not being sought. So if that tree was on my property and was dead, I could just tear it down and not come to the city and ask for anything, right?
That is correct. On a single-family zoned property, if you have a dead tree or you need to remove a tree because it's in the way or a hazard, and you don't have any permits open, you can remove the tree. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask one more question, and I'll be done. What is the least expensive way for the property owners to handle this? Is it to plant the 17 trees? Is that least expensive?
Yes, that would probably be the least expensive for them. I think in this case they're more interested in just paying the fee and kind of being done with it. But they do have the option to replant the trees if they want to.
But we haven't heard from the property owner yet.
Anyway. No. I have one question. Relative to arriving at the number of trees, we don't have a large agenda tonight. So from an educational standpoint, could we just go over how we arrived at the number of 17 and the rationale for that?
The
as to being one of the reasons that so many trees are required?
I think, yeah, we know or we assume that when you replant trees in a native setting, they don't all survive. We want them to eventually readapt and naturalize. So it's built into the formulas that there's going to be probably a 50% attrition rate. So the idea by planting 17 is hopefully we get six or so successful trees out of that planting. So that's why the number is higher than the actual number of trees we're replacing in the first place.
Okay, very good. Thank you kindly.
Can I ask a question?
Commissioner Schmidt?
I want to get back to Commissioner Bent's comments about the exceptions. If I'm cutting a dead tree down, am I actually removing 20% of any live branch that's on that tree? I mean, that's an exception is that you, as long as you remove less than 20% of living branches, you're accepted. But this is a dead tree. I can cut the entire tree down and not cut down I'm not cutting any living branches at all. So would it not apply for an exception?
No, the 25% rule deals with pruning of a tree, which is less than cutting the tree down.
Of living branches is what I heard.
Right. So if it has a dead branch, then that doesn't count toward the 25%. But that doesn't, you can't interpret that to say that if the tree is dead, that you can just prune it to nothing.
And I guess I somewhat take exception to the attrition rate. I think that we're finding in planting trees that it used to be a 1-to-4 type ratio because of the attrition rate. And I think that we're finding now that it's getting down to that 1 out of every 2 trees are surviving. And however it's written in the ordinance, I haven't read it, but trees are the expertise that we're gaining in doing this work is it's getting better and better. Attrition and the survival rate is much better than it has been in the past.
Okay. Any other questions? Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yeah, my question is the money that's paid into the tree fund, exactly how does that tree fund work? And how would that, is that for the property or is that for the city as a whole?
The tree fund goes into a fund that is for the benefit of the entire city. It's a restricted fund that's held by the city. It's administered basically in a partnership between the city of Atascadero and ANTA, which is the Atascadero Native Tree Association. And we work together on figuring out planting projects within town. In the last 2 years, I think we've done 4 replantings using some of this money. There's been a replanting down at Heilman Grove, 2 plantings up on Atascadero Creek by Carmelita, and just last month we did a replanting out at Paloma Creek Park. And I think we've planted probably about 700 to 800 replacement native trees. So that's how we're using the money, and that's the idea is to keep regenerating the trees where they're not regenerating naturally. We are focusing on the white oaks and the blue oaks. Those are the 2 species that are not regenerating on their own right now. The live oaks and the bay laurel trees actually are regenerating fairly successfully on their own. So we're not focusing on those right now with the replanting efforts.
Okay. Thank you.
Flexibility.
And you say that they do perceive this to be, you perceive it to be less expensive to replace the trees as opposed to paying into the fund, even including the labor involved in putting the trees in and all of that?
Well, I think that's the big variable. If you hire a contractor to go do it, and it may end up being more expensive, but you don't have to hire a contractor. The property owner or the homeowners association, they could go buy the trees and plant them themselves. So we don't have a requirement that you use professional help to plant the trees. So I think if you do the work yourself, especially if you're an individual homeowner, that sort of thing, you can do it much cheaper than the mitigation rates would be.
Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions? Commissioner Ward?
Yes, just one quick one. Is it always necessary for an applicant to go out and spend the money to hire a professional arborist to declare a tree is dead when it's obvious that it's dead?
Yes, it is our policy to require arborist reports. A lot of times we are looking for the cause of the demise of the tree. We are concerned about whether there was anything, you know, that maybe have led to the tree's decline. Okay. In some of the commercial areas, we have trees that do decline, but usually it's a result of construction or something related to a construction project. So that's typically why we ask for that. The other is just the arborist will make a determination about whether it's an emergency removal, because sometimes they will find that it has to come out immediately, and then we can use that to make findings to remove it more quickly.
Okay.
Thank you. That makes a lot of sense.
I'm ready to make a motion.
I'd like to thank staff because it is a learning experience, and this is, you know, seemed like a reasonable one to get into some of the additional detail. Is there anyone from the applicant that wishes to make a statement? Seeing none, bring it back to the commission for a motion or discussion, whichever is your pleasure.
Mr. Chairperson, I'm ready to make a motion.
Please proceed.
I move that we adopt the Planning Commission adopt resolution PC 2009-0011 to allow the removal of one dead valley oak totaling 52 inches diameter breast height, subject to conditions of approval.
Second.
Any discussion? Seeing none, Suzanne, would you please give us a roll call?
Vice Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Benz?
Yes.
Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes. Oh, Commissioner Sturdivant?
Sorry. Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Thank you.
And could I on a personal note, thank the chairman for going into this and allowing us to see the forest and not just the trees here.
Couldn't resist. Couldn't resist.
I don't want to beat a dead tree. But,
Well, it is St. Patrick's Day, so, you know. Okay, the next item on our agenda is a conditional use permit amendment. And so could we start from my left and disclose any expertise that would be appropriate?
The amendment to the conditional use permit that we're hearing tonight is for an expansion of an existing church at 5400 San Anselmo. The expansion consists of an extra 1,364 square feet and a remodel of the existing church for the True Spirit Missionary Baptist Church. And the project site is located here on the site plan. It's in the residential single-family Y zoning designation. And it's located just off El Camino Real, and it's bordered by limited single-family X and commercial retail. To give you a little bit of background about the project, it was originally approved in 1989, and single-family residence was converted for church use. The project was approved with the parking lot as shown below. It has 22 parking spaces, which was more than was originally required by code for the size of the church. The parking lot did include landscaping, and the parking lot the standard requirements for parking lot were waived in 1989 by the Planning Commission. What the commission decided was that it would be better to approve a gravel parking lot with without the solid 6-foot fence that's traditionally required by code in order to maintain the residential appearance of the parcel. This is a floor plan of the proposed addition. As you can see here, the area in green is the original 1,200 square foot church. There is an existing storage space and a breezeway that's proposed to be enclosed. And then the areas in blue are what's proposed to be added. So it's a new storage area and a new sanctuary area, totaling 1,364 square feet, bringing the total square footage of the entire structure up to just over 3,100 square feet. These are the elevations of the remodeled church. They're proposing to increase the slope of the front of the building. There's new windows designed along the elevations, a new front entry, and a steeple proposed on top. And these are the colors of the building with the metal roofing, white trim and windows, and a light gray siding. This is a site plan showing the existing building and the proposed additions. As you can see, and as it's shown in your staff report, the applicant is proposing to leave the parking lot as it was originally approved. And this does meet the parking requirements as far as the number of parking spaces for the current municipal code. The addition, it doesn't require any more parking than they already have. What would require an exception would be to allow the parking to remain with the gravel surface and the split rail fence the way it's currently constructed, and that would be consistent with the 1989 approval of the Planning Commission. There is a new detention basin that's going to be installed at the end of the parking lot, and this will collect any of the additional runoff from the new addition. And the project has also been conditioned for a new landscape plan, so that would just update any of the landscaping, make sure it's consistent with the original approval and consistent with the new addition. And staff has conditioned that to include drought-tolerant native plants and minimized turf areas. The applicant has also requested a change. A negative declaration was originally certified for the project in 1989, and the proposed addition qualifies for a categorical exemption, and that's for existing facilities and additions less than 1,000 square feet. There are five standard findings that the Planning Commission needs to meet or needs to make, and then one additional finding, which the Planning Commission made in the 1989 approval. And the additional finding is that the characteristics of the proposed use and its immediate vicinity do not necessitate the type of parking lot design required by the zoning ordinance. And this is specifically regarding the fencing and the surface materials for the parking lot. And tonight, staff is recommending that the Planning Commission approve the project as conditioned in your staff report. And that concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you, Kelly. Are there any questions? Commissioner Schmidt.
Yes, with respect to the on-street parking, or not allowing it, that was a requirement of the original conditional use permit, correct? It's not you're allowed to park on other portions of San Anselmo, or you're not?
Originally, the sidewalk wasn't installed, so I think that it was the original condition included it because it was a concern about having overflow parking from the church parking along the street. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, commercial uses are restricted to on-site parking only, and they aren't allowed to park in the residential neighborhoods. Currently, our staff's concern is regarding the width of the street, and because this area has the sidewalk installed, and with that sidewalk, it narrows the lane width.
But the curb width that the curb width that's in front of the church is the alignment of where the curb would be if it continued all the way up and down on along San Anselmo Street, correct?
Let me have somebody from Public Works answer that.
David Athey, Public Works. Your question was the lane width up and down the street?
There's curbing in front of the church. There's curbing down below next to the old Ford dealership right there. It seems like those curbs are in alignment with each other. And if there was to be a continuation that upend San Anselmo to the end, that is the width of the street on that side, is it not?
Potentially. I do not know where the right-of-way is on the far side of the street. It could be near the edge of traveled way in that case. The road actually, we might actually require the road to be widened even further towards the church side. I don't have a map in front of me, but it could potentially be that wide, or it could be wider or narrower.
Yeah, when I looked at it, I walked down to the base of San Anselmo at El Camino Real and looked up the curb length along the old Ford dealership, and everything seemed to be alignment going up the hill. And so it seemed like on that side of the street that the maximum or the curb width has been set. And in with that in mind, there's parking that is allowed in that area. In fact, I Googled the site, and there's cars parked along the curb along the Ford dealership in that area when I looked at the photograph.
Okay. Commissioner Moreno?
Continuing on that parking, couldn't someone theoretically park right across the street where there's no curbing, no sidewalk, and you end up with a smaller lane, and then someone's parking over there or down the road? They want their church to grow. And if people end up parking elsewhere, could that create a hazard? And then I have one other question, but I'll let you go with that first.
Well, the main reason Public Works recommends against on-street parking in this case is for the site distance. Now, pulling out of the driveway, we have a city standard 414 we use for site distance. The site distance in this case, the road is 35 miles an hour. The length of site distance from where a car is pulling out of an intersecting driveway is 250 feet. So sitting in the church's parking driveway and looking to the, let's call this west, towards Kmart, clearly doesn't meet that standard. People coming over that crest, there is no sight distance there. You can't see over that crest. They could potentially go 35 miles an hour. So it doesn't meet the city standard for driveways there for allowing, for sight distance.
And so for a second, if people then were parked, if coming out of the church parking lot and you've got that strip right there that's red, if people were parked there, that would not affect the site distance to coming from the west one way or another.
Well, in the site distance triangle, it would, because they'd be parked, the cars parked in that red zone would be parked in the site distance triangle. It has to be kept clear. So Public Works is recommending against allowing parking on street. The other reason,
Commissioner Schmidt,
one side of the, I mean, I feel everybody wants to park along the road. There's a couple of issues. The lane width on the, let's say, east side, Salinas River side of the parcel, is exactly almost 18 feet. So parking a car there leaves approximately a little less than 12 feet of travel lane width. So that, from that standpoint, the church would have to restripe the road and do some traffic control, some signage, lane narrows. On the road. So that was the second issue, is that on the upper side there is not enough space for parking on San Anselmo. And then on the bottom side going towards the west, is it doesn't meet our site distance standard.
Even if the site distance standard isn't already met, I mean, does parking to the west further inhibit the already inhibited site standard, or does it?
And the car is over 3 feet tall, so what happens is it anything over 3 foot in that triangle is not allowed per the city standard for driveways and intersections.
Okay, but what I'm saying is so it's already inhibited, so this would increase that inhibition. that inhibited area.
Yes, you okay. Potentially increase that.
Okay. And then one other question, the exemption that was originally given and that you're including again tonight is the gravel parkway. And I just wanted to ask Director Frace, here it says that, obviously the current standard requires asphalt or concrete paving, but really what they have right now, wouldn't that most likely be meeting our future standards when stormwater management plan comes into place?
Well,
being impervious.
Yeah, under the new swamp requirements, pervious paving is going to be something we're going to be looking at. Gravel lots tend.
Every restaurant in America parks their cars where they just stack them in there, and they have someone that just will move the cars later. Say they had a wedding or something and they needed a space for an extra 10 or 15 cars. There's plenty of space there, but they just have to pack them in tighter, and somebody would have to juggle them around after the event so they could get out. Is there anything in here that would prevent them from doing that?
Well, it is a private lot and private parking, so the city doesn't regulate that. We wouldn't go in and enforce that. We just check to make sure that they have enough on-site parking that's required by code. So the 22 spaces that they have meets our code requirements. What they choose to do with that lot is up to them.
But is there anything that would prevent them from putting more cars in there than 20?
Not necessarily.
So I don't see where there's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Commissioner Benz?
I visited the site, and I drove throughout the whole site, and I counted over 75 parking spaces that are on site.
The plan that they turned in shows 22 parking spaces. So that's what staff went with, was what they showed on their plans.
Well, they were actually lined, and I counted them. They had parking bumpers and everything else on them. So I think they have plenty of room to park extra cars, is my point.
Okay. Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes, I too want to focus on the parking for a moment. The have there been any problems that have arisen with respect to parking of cars out in the street when there are services?
Staff has not received any complaints from the neighbors on this project.
Now, you said when the project was originally approved in 89, it was approved with 22 parking spaces, more than required by code, and then you just said that still, even though they're going to double the capacity of this place, they'll still have 22 spaces, and that'll still be more than are required by code. Is there a formula that we can consult to know what the code requires?
Yes, our municipal code has parking requirements for every type of use. So for churches, it's actually depending on the size of the sanctuary or gathering space. So their original gathering space that they had in their old church didn't increase to such a point that it required additional parking with this amendment. So they were way over parked for their first project, and with this one they built the sanctuary to meet their existing parking.
Did you apply the formula here and come up with a number of parking spaces that are required?
22 spaces was what
exactly the, 22?
Yes.
Now? Oh,
yeah.
Really?
So I believe that the architect took that into consideration when designing the size of the space.
And then there is an application also to be able to use the facility more frequently, which makes all of this more of a concern than it otherwise might be if it were just Sundays and you had cars spilling out on the street. But do you, as a staff, do you feel confident that there's not going to be a problem arising here from cars spilling out into the street and, creating a congestion on the street?
No, for the size of the gathering space that they have in the building.
We could ask the applicant. Are there any other questions on something new? Okay. Everybody's okay with the building and that? Okay. Then at this point in time, I'd like to open it up to the applicant.
Hello. I'm Ted Weber. Is that better? There we go. Good evening, Chairman and Commission. Again, I'm Ted Weber, the architect, and representing the church. I'm here to answer any questions that you might have. In general, we agree with the staff report and want to thank the staff for their work on this. They've done a very thorough job. My main reason to be here is to answer any questions you might have, and then the pastor will be glad to speak also. And there's various members of the congregation here also that are in support of the project. Let's see. It's understandable restricting the parking on San Anselmo due to the site distance. So if if the engineering standards require that that remain, then, you know, we will go with that. But if there is any consideration that can be given, you know, to allowing parking that meets the the site standards, then we'd appreciate that. Secondly, in the conditions of approval, one of them is that the conditional use permit be valid for 12 months. And what I would, in view of the current economic climate, I'd request that we be given a 24-month approval to get the building permit. Other than that, one other question that maybe we could get clarified, and that is, I believe it's item 14, drainage easements shall be obtained by the applicant as needed to accommodate both public and private drainage facilities. I'm not sure what that applies to and what we need to do there.
Okay.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Well, that the condition
on the easements.
14 on drainage easements shall be obtained by the applicant. I think currently there is a drainage easement along that westerly side of the property where there's a culvert that goes under San Anselmo and then drains across the property and then kind of takes a left turn and goes westerly across the westerly neighbor's property.
Are we seeking new drainage easements?
David Athey, Public Works. This is a standard condition we put on property.
And good evening, Mr. Weber. I don't know if this is a question for you or for staff, but with condition 6, at the very last bullet point, the exterior light fixtures, is there an issue with those needing to be, you know, hooded or something so that there's not, I mean, granted, you know, a church isn't going to be like a, you know, a big, you know, retail place with a big, huge light on it or something, but just wondering, is that an issue at all with the neighbors and needing hooded lights?
It would be subject to the standard requirements of the lighting ordinance, which just requires that all the light be kept on site. So if that requires hooded fixtures, then those would be installed. Typically, if it's a small fixture, it doesn't cause a problem.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes, Mr. Weber. Could you explain to the commission the need for the off-street parking? And what's the rationale behind it?
The rationale was the church has kind of grown beyond what the small room that they've been using. And so they needed to increase the size of the sanctuary space. And in studying the lot and the circulation, it was difficult to increase the size of the existing parking. And so we're kind of in kind of reverse engineered the sanctuary space to conform to the parking ordinance so that we didn't require adding any more spaces.
Mr. Athey had talked about the if parking was to be allowed on the street, that there would be some additional improvements that would be needed in terms of signage and things like that. Were you made aware of that?
No, I don't think that would be a big issue. You have to put in signage.
How many more parking spaces do you think you'll get on the street?
Well, we never really address that. It's just more of convenience in case there was overflow or, you know, the ordinance, the design criteria are such that you need so many cars per seat that you have in the mm-hmm. auditorium. And you can't really regulate how many people drive up to the church, you know, if you have four persons per car or two people per car, you know. And so it would just be more for the convenience of the church parishioners to be able to to park there, maybe bring friends or something, and, you know.
Okay, thank you.
That's it.
Commissioner Colomarino?
There seems to be some uncertainty about the number of parking spaces in that lot. Have you counted them yourself? Do you have a number that you're relying on?
Well, yeah, the site design there shows the city standard parking spaces, and that's what we have to use to show how many spaces are designed to meet the ordinance. So that's what we came up with.
So is it your understanding that there are 22 spaces there?
Yes, 22 standard parking area there that's outlined on the site plan will meet the city standard.
Is there other property that's not on that site plan that the church uses for parking?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Weber.
Mm-hmm.
Did someone...
maybe Pastor Haynes would like to...
Pastor Haynes?
You don't have to.
You've been volunteered, sir.
Thank you so much. I would just like to say I appreciate what I've heard so far. And I would like for you to really think seriously about how badly we need to upgrade our church to make it compatible with Atascadero. Our church looks worse than any church in Atascadero, and that bothers me. So I'm doing all that I can to make this church look as nice as any other church. I need your help, your prayers, and if you want to give us a donation, you feel free.
Pastor Hanks, could there may be a question or two that you might be the appropriate person to respond to. Does anyone, any commissioner, have any questions? I have a question from the standpoint of usage. You know, we're going from 2, and you're asking for 7-day, and I'm curious what is driving this. How do we get to this, or is this just kind of a general request?
From 2 days to 7 days?
Yeah, isn't that what you're asking for, or have I misinterpreted something?
I think it wouldn't be any problem because we won't get everybody there, not 7 days, but we'll get so many, we'd be really comfortable regardless. You know, 7 days wouldn't make any difference because we still have ample room.
Okay.
We want to help me on this one. This is Vern Jr. Haynes.
Yeah, I'm Vern Haynes Jr., the assistant. The reason we made for that request was it would give us a lot of flexibility with our activity needs, one vacation Bible school, special programs that may take a place during the week or even during the month. We have quite a few youth that are starting to attend, and we need that time other than just sticking to the Wednesday and the Sunday. And I believe there's some other youth activities I just can't think of at the moment, but I know vacation Bible schools during the summertime that we have. And then we have our Wednesday night, Friday night activities we like to do with them for special events because, you know, we try to come up with activities to keep the kids busy. Other than that, that's why we made the request for the 7 days, because it just gave us the flexibility. We wouldn't be locked in. And we wanted to have some normal church operation times like the other churches.
Okay. Yeah, that was the only the question. Just, you know, we go from here to there, and I was kind of curious of how you were looking to utilize that time.
And we wanted to bring it to the modern times, you know.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, sir. Pastor Hanks?
Yes, I just thought you might want to ask me another one. Question.
You are prepared this evening.
No, I just I don't want to overdo it, but I hope you can understand how nice that building would look compared to the one we're in now.
Very definitely.
Church in this town. I think that the improvements that this church has made to this property from what it was as a single-family residence back in the 80s is huge. And it's really, I consider it a privilege to have this church here, and I consider it a privilege to speak for them, for us. I really encourage the Planning Commission to approve the amendment of the conditional use permit. As far as the parking, that seems to be the only real controversy from what I'm getting. And Commissioner Bentz, I don't know where there are 75 spots. I've been in the church and on that property many times, and I know the parking lot. I know that the allocated parking spots are very generous. They're not the little tiny compact ones. They're generous. But other than that, I mean, the church is on an acre, and this is a small church. There might be, 20 or 25 people on a Sunday morning. We're not talking about, you know, a big church. So unless you went back to the lawn area, I don't know where you could see 75 parking spaces. I really don't. Also, I have been up and down, because I live on Falda, I've been up and down San Anselmo probably, 4 to 8 times a day for the last 20 years. It's a 35-mile-per-hour zone, as you know. And when I'm coming down San Anselmo, the church is on my right-hand side, and there is an indentation of about 3 to 4 parking spaces. Okay, there's 2 lanes, and then there's an indentation right in front of the church that is about 3 to 4 parking spaces. Then you've got the opening to the parking lot, and then you've got a house, and then a Tascadero Ford. So when a Tascadero Ford was open, people were parking like up on the curb in front of or on the side of a Tascadero Ford. I've always wondered as I passed by why, because I stop there to use my cell phone because, you know, we can't talk on our cell phones when we drive, so I always pull over in front of the church to use my cell phone. And I always wonder why that is not allowed parking, why that's painted red, because there's so much space. And it's an indentation. It's not in the roadway. I don't even see where the lane narrows in order to allow for parking there. I know that there's a school bus that stops there twice a day, and the parents, and it's comfortable stopping there, and that buses are big, and there are parents that park in the parking lot to wait for their kids. All the times that I've been up and down San Anselmo, and there's a lot of Sundays that I've been up and down and haven't been in church, I've never seen anybody park across the street, ever. I think that True Spirit Missionary Baptist Church and the folks that go there have bent over backwards to make that an attractive place and obey every single rule of the town. So I just encourage you to pass the amendment, and I hope that you will consider letting them have those extra parking spaces. And here's a really good reason to have them. They would be perfect for people in wheelchairs because right now there are 2 handicap places right close to the entrance to the church. But to get a wheelchair out and get a person into it, you have to come across that gravel parking lot. Well, that's difficult in a wheelchair. If people had that, the street side, you know, just 3 parking spaces on the street, it'd be a lot easier to maneuver a wheelchair. Thank you.
And we are the best church this side of heaven. So I'm not going to say we're trying because we are. And I invite you all to come and see for yourself. But we need the space. You know, we need the space because God is moving. And there's nothing that any of us can do but accept it. So you've all been past the property. You've all seen it. So you've seen the plans, and you see the difference that this can make. You know, so we're not talking about our house. We're talking about improving God's house.
Amen. Thank you. Is there anyone else? Oh, seeing none, I'll close the pub. Oh, come right back. You were standing back there, and
I was waiting to see if anybody else was going to come before I spoke a second time. Okay. Jolene Horn again, Atascadero. A point I forgot to make that maybe isn't clear. In terms of expanding the church, the sanctuary now is maybe, 1,000 square feet, 800 square feet. That's the existing sanctuary. Okay, so we're going to add a sanctuary that's 1,200 square feet, but the original sanctuary is going to be used as office space. Mm-hmm. So just to make that clear, the sanctuary is still only going to be about 1,200 square feet. And then we're going to have more office space and then the other rooms for the various activities that the pastor was describing. So I just wanted to clarify that we're not doubling the sanctuary space. It's a new sanctuary plus office space. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Horn. Now seeing no one approaching the lectern, I'll close the public portion and bring it back for deliberation by the commission. Commissioner Benz.
Yes, a question for staff. There's been a request to extend condition 4 by 12 months. Is that possible?
Yes, actually, staff took a look at that, and we'd actually recommend that you do that. Because the use is already established, it's not necessary. It's a standard condition that can be waived.
Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Calamarino.
I also have a question for staff. And going back to this formula for figuring out how many parking spaces are needed, is that based on the capacity that's used for the sanctuary or for the entire building?
It's only for the sanctuary space. Actually, I can tell you exactly what it says in our code. It's going to be 1 per 4 fixed seats or 1 per 40 square feet of spectator area. So either per 40 square feet of the sanctuary space or 1 per the 4 seats.
So then the office area is not included in the calculation, I guess.
It's not, because the code estimates that the highest parking numbers will be there when the services are in session.
And therefore, since the sanctuary space is not really being expanded, then the parking requirements are pretty much staying the same. The 22 spaces are, is that what was required before this renovation?
It was definitely less than that. The staff report from 89 just said that it was overparked.
But it has increased. Now the requirement based on the calculation has been increased to the 22 spaces that are in the parking lot, in the parking area.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Any other? Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yeah, my question is for staff. My thought is when you're sitting in the driveway and you're pulling out of the church and you look to your right, there's that rise in the road, so it's kind of hard to see anybody coming. And vehicles there, I can understand, would be very difficult adding to that. But if you're to your left on the, I guess it would be the east side of the property, is there any, when it comes to distances, is it possible for a few spaces at the very far eastern portion to have as disabled against the curb there with signage? Would that be within the municipal code or the, you know, for the site distance and all that?
David Athey, Public Works. I wouldn't recommend against that. That's the narrowest part of the road at that point. And ADA or accessibility requirements, was it 4 foot? It requires a safe zone besides where folks who are disabled can park. So they have a travel path. It's called a travel path to the front door. So if the applicant did that, he would have to provide a travel path to the front door from the street to the front door. And I just don't see how it would work in this case unless they took out the current alignment of curb gutter sidewalk and realigned it on the road, you know, widen the road further. So I would recommend against that. I don't see how that would work, but it's an idea.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Calamarino?
Could I follow up on that? Are you concerned that allowing disabled parking out by the road might imperil somebody going in and out of one of those vehicles in the disabled spots?
Yes. Just because of the limited travel lane width at that point of the road.
Thank you.
And you can engineer around it, but at this point it wouldn't work just restriping and you know, putting in a ramp or those kind of things.
I'm going to interject a question of my own here. Is there any way that you could see to allow any additional parking that you would be comfortable with, whether it be one space, whether it be two, whether any in that area?
At this point, I don't. even at the widest point of the road to the west, down by Kmart or the Tascadero Ford side, there's a steep rise in the road, hump in the road that goes down towards El Camino Real. So if cars are even parked there where it's wider, there's an extra 3 feet of width there at that point, actually extra 5 feet of width. Pulling out and pulling onto the road at that point, there's no way to really see what's coming from the other direction. So they would also be allowed from that point to do a U-turn and drive eastbound. No matter how far-fetched it sounds, you could do that, and it, at that point it does not meet the site distance.
Be helpful with more parking, and are we at a standstill on that, I guess is the question.
Mr. Chair, I could just interject.
Yes, you know, please.
This parking issue, this really comes down to it's a safety issue, and there's a lot of considerations with lane width, site distance, that sort of thing. I think if the commission really wants the answer on whether we can add more parking or what the options are, you probably need to continue this, refer it back to Public Works, have them go out there and do some detailed analysis, because we're all just kind of guessing here in this room about what ifs, and these are serious decisions that would need to, you know, actual field work to answer those questions.
Okay. At this point, I'd like to ask the applicant if adult continuing this to allow that would be, if they would be interested in that.
Ted Weber. I don't think that this is really a mountain we want to die on, you know. the parking would be nice in driving out there. It just seems that it's a little more restrictive than what's in the rest of the neighborhood. But if there are engineering considerations that would have to be designed around, what we could potentially do is put a caveat in the approval that if a traffic engineer could demonstrate that it was safe, then, you know, to the satisfaction of the city engineer, then we could.
Yeah, that's our major concern, because they're the professionals, and we have to rely on the information that they provide us. So if you were really looking to get some additional, because my sense is around we'd like to, but my sense is also that we're not looking to go against our city engineers. So if the additional two or three parking spaces was important, then we could go ahead and continue this and allow them to do some additional measurements and looking at it from that standpoint and then bring it back. And since you were requesting a 24-month delay, I didn't know whether that time was that critical at this point.
Well, I think we would just soon move ahead. It's okay. Been in the works for quite some time, and we would really like to press ahead. And,
okay.
And the extra parking would be nice, but
That's why I wanted to ask the question to give you the opportunity to have it either way.
Yeah, we appreciate that. Thank you very
okay.
much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Commissioner Benz.
We most certainly aren't traffic engineers, and we most certainly have adequate expertise on our staff. And they have been very kind in allowing us to consider this. And if it were possible to do, I'm sure they would be willing to do it. But they have not. And the applicant does not want to make this a real problem. So I would say that we stay with exactly what has been recommended by the staff. And I would make
there's no real reason to strain so hard here, because they do have adequate parking, as we've heard. And personally, I guess I feel a little more comfortable with the idea that disabled individuals are able to get entrance to the church from a sufficiently spacious parking area, and they're not going to be out in the public road at risk. I think that if we have that situation where there are people out on the public road going in and out, we're possibly exposing city or the church, for that matter, to risks of liability, and to say nothing of the safety of the individuals involved. So deferring to the staff's recommendation, I think, here makes good sense.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Schmidt?
And with respect to the current situation, status quo remains. So the loading zone that's in front of the church is going to remain?
That's,
I don't know. I'd like for the commissioners to consider their request on the parking. I parked on that side of the street, as Commissioner Moreno did, and watched cars go by. I didn't feel that there was any danger to the cars passing through. When I look at the there's a map that we have on page 24. Lobos Avenue is right up the street from here. Those people have to turn left and make their way down there with the same sight distance problems. That doesn't seem to be a concern. Where I live on Santa Rosa Road, narrower than this road, same type of speed, probably more traffic than this, and cars are parked along the side of the road all the time. And when I consider the use of the church, when I go to church and we're on San Gabriel Road, there's hardly any traffic on the road at Sunday morning or even at the other times in which the church will be operating. There aren't peak times, and so there isn't the load of cars that would be there at 8 o'clock in the morning and at 5 o'clock at night. And so I'd like the commissioners to consider that it's possible to do, and if you're willing to add a caveat that if the church wants to proceed with this and hire a traffic engineer and show that it can work in some way, then let's allow them to do that. And they then have the choice whether they want to proceed or not.
Maker of the motion.
I'd like to see us vote on the initial motion.
Okay. Then is there any other discussion? I'll just make one comment on that. I, too, parked in a couple of places there. I did have a little concern because of the speed of the cars coming down that hill, and somebody that's going to church maybe wouldn't be paying as close attention as they would need to and could open a door, a child get out, and I can see where staff has a concern. So with that, Suzanne, could we have a roll call on the original motion, please?
Commissioner Benz?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturtevant?
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
No.
Bring up, or we'll move right into the discussion, the conference discussion. We'll have a financial report as to how we can spend money.
All right, we'll take over here for you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I think what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the upcoming conference, go over the agenda, and then I have our finance director, Rochelle Rickard, here. She's going to give us some pointers on how we're supposed to or need to comply with the different purchasing rules that apply when you're on a trip like this. So I think to start with, let's just go over the agenda. So I handed out everybody a copy of the agenda. It does start Wednesday. The first session is at 1 o'clock. And it'll run through Friday about noon. One of the things we're hoping to do with this session is make sure that the commission gets as much of the basics and kind of 101 type training. So I've put up on the screen some of the training sessions that I think would be very appropriate for the commission to attend. And maybe we'll just go through these real quick and we can have a quick little discussion about it. But on Wednesday, March 25th, the session from 2:45 to 4 p.m., there's the California Environmental Quality Act 101, that's CEQA basics. I think that would be a really good one. All these projects that come through the commission all have some sort of CEQA document, whether it's a negative deck or an EIR. And I know staff-wise, we're always throwing a lot of jargon at you, and they're usually thick and they're very technical. And I think this will be a real good session just to kind of get the basics of how all the pieces fit together. And typically when we get challenged on a project legally, this is the weak underbelly of the process. There's always something that you do wrong on CEQA that opens you up to a challenge or litigation. And on a high-profile project like, say, a Walmart-type thing, that's what they're going to look at. They're going to find the one thing you did wrong and then try to overturn the decision based on that. So that's the kind of thing. It's real good to just know what the process is. Yes, Heather?
I had noticed that myself, and I was wondering, would it make sense for anyone to also go to the advanced CEQA, since it talks about environmental impact reports and things like that? Would it make sense to maybe double up? Or I go by your recommendation. I just seen both of those and tick marked them and was wondering.
Yeah. I think we should all go to this one, because on Friday there's one on reading EIRs. So I think that would, if you did the basic one, then when you jump to the more advanced one, it probably fits together a little bit better. So I would recommend everybody circle that one.
Consensus on that? Okay, very good.
Will you be going to the advanced one, Warren?
You know, I'm not sure if I'm going to be down there in time. I've got a city council special session Wednesday morning that I got to go to, so I'm going to be getting down there a little late, so I might miss that one. But if I can get there, I will.
I'd like to go to the advanced. I take seminars every year on CEQA, and I'm pretty much up to bone on a lot of the stuff. I don't mind going to both. I don't know if I can. I'm kind of looking at they're together. Yeah.
Well, that would, I have no problem, so that we would all be on the same page. And as you know, the training is an issue with me for the year. I do want to see us get as much as we can, and so I appreciate the recommendation. And if no one has any major objections, then Commissioner Schmidt could go to the advanced one, and we would attend the basic one, the rest of us.
Okay. And then there's a second concurrent session on Wednesday. It starts at 4:15. I've circled on that one the planning commissioner's roles and responsibilities. I think that's going to be another good basic one on just what the role of a planning commission is. So I'd recommend that one as well to the commission.
Yeah, no, I think that's something that we could all use and we all be on the same page. I would appreciate it if everybody would go to that one. Okay.
So then Thursday morning, Thursday's a full day. So I think, let's see, I was looking at the morning session, and I think that's kind of open. There's not one that probably the commissioners have to go to. There's a couple interesting ones. There's one on Finance 101. There's one on Housing Elements and Top 10 Questions. All three of those would probably be of interest to the commission, but I think you have flexibility to pick out of that group.
What about SB 375?
That's the Housing Element.
SB 375 is also, well, that's actually a group session. That 8:15 to 9:45, that's a group session.
Oh, okay.
So that's, I think, your breakfast session that everybody will attend.
All right. Good. Yeah, so, because there's a couple I'd like to be at. I'd like to play a Harry Potter program and move time around there. But
there you go.
So, anyway, you're open. We'll do that as whatever your preference is.
Yeah, so typically what they do is on Thursday there'll be the kind of the group breakfast, and then they'll have these two presentations, the whole group, before they break everybody up. And then they'll reconvene everybody for lunch. There's usually a presentation at lunch as well. So then your next sessions start at 2:30. There's two sessions there that you might want to consider. One is how to run a meeting. I think that's a good one just in terms of the process, decorum, that sort of thing. The other one that's important is the understanding public service ethic laws and principles. That's actually a required training session. So any of the new commissioners that haven't completed the online training, this would be an opportunity. If you attend this two-hour class, that'll take care of your training. If you're not sure even what I'm talking about, this would be the thing that Marsha's probably sent to you saying you got to do your ethics training.
And you must stay there for the entire 2 hours. Do not get there a minute late, and do not leave 1 minute early.
They do. They'll take attendance, and they're going to give you a certificate if you stick it out. Yep. So if you haven't done your ethics training, that would be your opportunity to take care of that.
I assume since I got nothing from Marcia that I did it the last time.
If you did it last year, I think it covers you for 2 years.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. I took one 4 years ago.
So. Okay.
So that would be
So that
Thursday.
Would primarily be for, now, for everyone here.
No.
With the exception of.
Went through at the last 2 years ago. She's not buying.
And it's way worse than 2 years ago now. It's gotten worse.
I'm sure it has.
Okay, so moving on to Friday.
Commissioner Marino?
Yeah, I had a question about the welcome dinner on Wednesday night. Is that, are we supposed to, should we attend that en masse, you know, together? Or
I think that'd be a good idea.
Yes.
I think you'll get a packet, you'll get tickets to all these sorts of things. So, yeah, I should be down there by that time, so I'll plan on joining you for that, whoever's going to go to the welcome dinner.
Okay. Yeah, that would
you
be
want
fun.
Us all sitting at the same table?
Yeah. We want you all dressed the same, wear your city
yeah,
shirts.
Right.
Skirts
same,
for all of you
same
boys.
Same table and the same evening. I can buy into that, but as far as the
we
same
won't
dress.
We will be violating the Brown yeah. Act, will we?
No. No.
Yeah, Thursday I might have a conflict in the at night. But anyway.
Thursday night?
Yeah, I might have a conflict. I have somebody who's talking about coming down to see me that night.
That's fine. I'll
bring her along.
Making assumptions here, Sandy. No, I am.
Oh, I heard a rumor.
No, my wife is going to be accompanying me, and no, one of my former clients is talking about coming down to go out to dinner. But anyway,
that should not be a problem.
Okay, then Friday's a half day, so looks like there's a breakfast, and then there's a session starting about 8:15, so that's where there's the how to read an environmental impact report, and because we are going to be dealing with the Walmart EIR probably within the next 12 months, and it will be a 500-page document, I think that might be a good one for all the commissioners to go to as well.
Absolutely. Anybody have a problem with that?
No.
Okay.
I had it marked.
Good.
And then there's the closing session, I guess, is 10 to 11, and after that you're done and free to go wherever you want to go.
Okay. Very good.
I'd like to have a how to read environmental impact report. They're not so dry for me. I enjoy reading them personally. The land use law update seems to be attractive to me. I don't know. I'll decide.
When is it?
Oh, the same time as the environmental impact report.
Environmental impact.
And they include case laws that deal with CEQA and land uses and so on.
And this is on the Friday?
Friday
morning.
8:15, yeah.
Best practices? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, land use law update.
Land use law.
Okay.
I have a question. Warren, is the practice,
background, I think
is the practice to give you written materials for each of these things?
They encourage the presenters to do that, but it seems like it's highly variable. Some presenters are real good at giving a lot of materials. Other people don't show up with enough. They tend to, though, try to publish some sort of CD-ROM at the end that has all the different presentations. Awesome. And most of the information is PowerPoints now, so usually you can get that information at the end. And maybe I'll make sure we buy a copy of the CD-ROM of the whole conference, and then everybody can look at it and see, you know, what went on at other sessions as well.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, because that land use law update.
You can collect all of the written data that's available and bring it back to your room, read it, stay up all night, and study it.
Yeah.
Because we're going to have a test when we get back, and we've got to give a 50-page report to Warren on what we learned.
You guys are
okay. So we're going to have Rochelle now go over the purchasing policy.
This thick document here?
That's actually just the travel section of the purchasing policy.
Sorry, I asked.
Yes, there's lots of rules and regulations, and this is going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to go, don't do this, and you can't do that, and it should be great fun. Overall, the travel policy is governed by two things. There's AB 1234, which sets forth some rules and regulations on reimbursement and travel for elected officials or officials that are appointed by the city council. And so your travel policy is quite a bit more restrictive than the city employees' travel policy because of AB 1234. Our purchasing policy sets forth the city's travel policy for everyone. It does differentiate between employees and officials. So as you're going through there, if you see, well, employees can get per diem, they can, officials cannot. So I'm going to kind of go through some of the things. Overall, the travel policy follows basic common sense rules of thumb. Remember, you're traveling on the taxpayer's dime. You want to be prudent and cautious with it, and you want to be able to pass the front page test. So everything you do is public record, and you want to be okay with whatever you did has your name right next to it on the front page. And so, you know, just be aware of that all of your receipts, again, are public record. Everything you do is going to be a public record. Make sure that you represent the city well. Okay, the definition of official is an individual appointed to an office by the city council. So all of you are officials. Oops, is it not going through? Okay, try one more. There we go. What may not be reimbursed? Again, common sense. Any personal portion of a trip can't be reimbursed. Any portion of a trip for someone other than yourself. So if there's an extra room charge for a spouse or someone else staying in the room for you, you need to be able to pick that up. Obviously, no political or charitable contributions. Entertainment expenses, personal automobile expenses not related to mileage, personal losses, if your purse is stolen, none of that's reimbursable.
That includes things like speeding tickets or something?
Speeding tickets are not reimbursable.
All right.
Commissioner Moreno.
Rochelle, I will be carpooling down, and then I am staying down there for personal and then coming back later. So my plan would be, and tell me if this is appropriate, I would basically MapQuest from here to the location, double that, and that's it to make sure there are no extraneous miles in there. Would that be the appropriate thing to do for the mileage reimbursement?
That would be appropriate if you were the one driving. If you're riding with a friend and they're driving, it's not appropriate to get a mileage reimbursement.
Oh, correct.
Meals are reimbursable. Again, we have some definite time frames on that, on when your travel begins and when it ends. I looked through the flyer for the Institute. You will be eligible for a lunch on your own on Wednesday because you have to leave travel before or after 8, but before whatever the times are there. Dinner will be provided by the conference. So if a dinner or lunch or meal is provided by the conference, you are not eligible for reimbursement. I'm not saying you have to go eat the rubber chicken that they provide, but you're not allowed to get reimbursed if you decide to go have some real food somewhere else. Thursday's dinner, again, is going to be on your own. Wednesday they will be providing dinner, so we won't have a reimburse from that. Thursday dinner is on your own, and then Friday lunch would be eligible. Okay, now the tough part. So AB 1234 says that for officials, we can only reimburse you actual costs up to the U.S. or the domestic per diem rate for the U.S. General Services Administration.
Screwed again.
That's it. And we do need actual receipts. Now, those amounts are, if you look through the travel policy to page 50, and down near the bottom it says per diem method. The rates for LA are actually a little bit higher than that. So following the policy, you're eligible for $12 for breakfast, $18 for lunch, and $31 for dinner. Now, that being said, typically our council and others have actually used the lower per diem rates that we use citywide if they're in a higher area, just to be conservative and try and save the city money. It is up to you. You are eligible for either one, but mainly we see the 10, 15, and 26 come through. And you guys can mix and match on where you feel comfortable doing that. I think Thursday dinner, if you go out to dinner together, is going to probably take a little work to try and figure out how you're going to do this. Obviously, we have the option of individual receipts for each one of you, with each one of you requesting reimbursement up to the max of $31. I know it's hard to get a decent meal in L.A. for $31. Obviously, you can get it, but it's not easy. If you try and do a group receipt, somehow or another, one of you would have to, or however you want to do it, do you all want to throw in cash? You guys are going to have to try and coordinate. How do we get so that you're all at $31 and not over that amount?
So we couldn't have, say, Commissioner Colomarino wants to buy all of us dinner. Or, you know, somebody.
I'll vote for that.
Okay. I think second. You have it right.
All in favor?
I haven't heard a second.
So, right. So could
you're
we,
on the hook for that one.
could it be it. Where somebody then submits the reimbursement for everybody, and as long as, you know, let's go with the 26,
six,
let's say,
right.
26 times 7 equals, you know,
right.
As long as it hit that, is that
that
okay?
That is very acceptable.
So you don't have to say, oh, you know, Commissioner Moreno had $24
no.
And Commissioner
yeah,
Schmidt was
no,
$27.
26 okay. Times 7 and do it that way. Obviously, time that we're doing that. But I just want to let people know that that's out there. So if Warren shows some hesitation, it's probably because we've had previous attorneys that take the more conservative definition.
Well, he had a lot of practice two well, years ago.
We're
so going
to talk
sure
to Warren privately about that.
I think Warren's been chipping in. Every time he takes the planning commissioners anywhere, it's like, okay, Warren, I need a personal check. Cough up money. He's going, but. As officials, you're not entitled to any other reimbursements unless you make a phone call or a fax on city business. We're not allowed to make any personal phone calls. I know, you know, with employees, we are allowed one phone call when you arrive to say you arrive and one phone call when you leave. You guys aren't even allowed that. Sorry that the city will reimburse.
Well, it's in keeping with the pay that we receive.
Exactly. We do have to have an expense claim when you come back. Annette should be happy to help you with that. Keep your receipts. I can't reimburse you unless I have a receipt for it. And basically, inability to provide documentation in a timely manner means you don't get reimbursed.
Rochelle,
yes.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
I think that doesn't the city advance pay for the conference and the rooms? And we don't have to put that on our expense report because you have advanced it?
It'll show up on the expense report. The expense report's actually a total of all of the revenues and expenses that are with that title. So it'll show that when Annette prepares your expense report, she's going to have what your total tuition was and what the total hotel was, and then she'll have that you already paid that. So how much did it cost?
My only question was whether I have to put it on the expense report or whether you guys add it to the expense report for me.
Annette will put together the whole report, I'm repeating what Warren says, if you submit the receipts
okay,
to
I
her.
Okay, I can do that, but
okay.
It's going to cost Warren more.
I think the next one. And basically, you guys are responsible for all of your stuff. So you're accountable for the administration of the city's travel policy. You guys are the stewards. A couple of things that I missed in this awkwardness were mileage reimbursements for transportation. The city's overall policy is you take the most cost-effective method down there. For most people, it's carpooling and driving down there. When you read the purchasing policy, I was reading it thinking this is awful and very confusing. What it is you get 55 cents a mile. So we just need to know how many business miles you have driven. If you go off to dinner, you know, 40 miles outside or 20 miles away, you're not entitled to that. But any of your business travel is there. If there is a session, you know, 10 blocks away or 10 miles away on looking at what a great project is, obviously that is business related. You would be entitled to that. Otherwise, it's there and back.
You know, because our hotel, as I understand, is off-site, so there would be that.
Yeah. Hey, take it.
Round trip.
Take it.
That's it. You are entitled to the round trip back and forth to the conference.
Travel 10 miles trying to find a parking spot, so you get to train that. Too.
That's it.
Figure out among yourselves any carpooling arrangements. That does end up saving quite a bit of money. It's not mandatory at all, but if there's any convenient ways you guys can go together, that would be great.
I have a ride down, but not one back. Oh, that's right. Okay. I'm covered.
Okay.
Okay, so that's one. Who else is? Well, Brian. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Is anybody? All right. Okay.
And then the other tricky thing usually seems to be checking into the hotel and all that sort of stuff. So I'll have Annette send out instructions and all the information on how to get there, how to check in, because I won't be there when you're checking in. If there's a hang up or something, probably Annette's going to be the person to call, you know, if for whatever reason there's any sort of hiccup when you get down there.
Okay. And will we be able to do an early check-in, because it starts at 1 o'clock, and if check-ins are typically at 3 o'clock, so is there a way to, could she ask for that if maybe a noon check-in? I don't know if that's realistic for the hotel or not.
I'm sure, you know, midweek shouldn't be a problem. So I will let Annette know that to arrange that ahead of time, so that's okay. Not a problem.
And let either. Us know, that would be great.
Yeah, so I'll make sure she gets you some information, let you know about early check-in.
Thank you.
So check in as Warren Frace.
Well, I don't have a room, so that'll be a problem for you. You'll be checking in at my mom's house.
What's she
I don't know. So,
are we covered?
Any other kind of questions for Rochelle or on the conference?
No, we're in good shape.
Okay.
Director's report, or was that it?
Nope, there's more to come. All right, so director's report. So just in case you don't get enough training next week in Anaheim, we are also going to do a special training session for the Planning Commission and Parks and Rec Commission on March 31st, which is the fifth Tuesday. So that would be in 2 weeks. So it's 3 weeks till your next Planning Commission meeting. So that is going to be hosted by city staff, mainly myself and Marcia will be running that. We're going to be doing, and this is going to be more overview brief training, we're not going to get too detailed, but we're going to be talking about the Brown Act. We're going to be talking about ethics training, which is something you guys will all be experts on. We'll be talking about the norms, which are part of the city adopted procedures. We'll be talking about ex parte disclosures and conflicts, and then Wade's going to be making a little presentation update on the latest information on the budget process. So all the commissioners, you should have received that little commissioner handbook from Marcia when you joined. So you'll want to bring that to the 31st, because we're going to be kind of walking through that and hitting all the high points in that. So that meeting, I believe, is at 6 o'clock on the 31st. Bring that. Here. It'll be here in the council chambers.
Yeah.
So that's my big item. I guess the other item, like I just mentioned, your next Planning Commission meeting is going to be April 7th. We've got a couple minor items scheduled at this point. Tractors are going to end up affecting a lot of the Planning Commission's work in the future. And that concludes my report.
Thank you. And I think that takes us to adjournment.